Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
Greetings, Curiosity Builders. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, makers, artists, podcasters, writers, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of bringing their ideas to life by creating new things and getting their work to work. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you learn something new in this podcast, challenge your assumptions about what is possible, and chase big ideas so you can become who you were born to be. How would you describe the way you play in your daily routines and work processes? Is play something you feel you need to hide, or is it a critical component of your creative identity? These are the questions that get today's guest on Getting Work to Work to think deeply. Troy Coleman is a designer and creative leader who takes play seriously. In this interview, we talk in depth about the role of play in approaching new ways to solve problems, vulnerability and meeting the expectations of others, why you should set time limits when playing, why everyone plays differently, and how we are all creative leaders. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/371. You'll also find links to stream the show on the major podcast platforms, an opportunity to keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios through the Curiosity Lab, and ways to support Getting Work to Work by purchasing posters, swag packs, and more. Troy, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, how are you doing, Chris?
You know what? I've got three cups of coffee in me. I'm ready to go. And I'm excited to have this conversation with you because I thoroughly enjoyed our conversations at Bend Design and can't wait to dive into learning more about your views on play, problem solving, fun, and flow.
Awesome. Let's do it.
All right. So just starting out, what's one interesting bit of trivia people should know about you?
Wow. One interesting bit of trivia. I have a lot of education, formal education, mm-hmm. in the form of course, my design education, but I also have degrees in theater and environmental science.
Whoa, what?
Yeah. I haven't spent a lot of time on stage. I've done a little bit of community theater years ago, but I did work as a wetland ecologist and soils chemist for a short time before getting fully back into design. And it's actually one of the things that kind of drove me back into wanting to be a designer again. It was really interesting work, and I still use skills from it every day. But yeah, that's me. The trivia part is that some members of my family would say, okay, Troy, we understand your parents wanted you to get an education, but it's time to stop.
Yeah.
You're done. You can go do things now. So,
well, what's great is like I had this perception of you as we were talking that you were a healthy mix of both thought, action, left and right brain activity. And now that you've told me your trivia, I'm like, yeah, I mean, you are the personification of left brain, right brain,
right.
In your education alone.
It is. And as a designer, I have found that to be a blessing and a curse.
Hmm.
Working in so many different and diverse environments, right? Before I got into design at all, I worked as in a bike shop and was a bike mechanic and a frame builder. So there was the mechanical aspect, and then working in the theater, but learning different ways to communicate with different kinds of people and being able to explain ideas that may be very intuitive to you, but seem very abstract to somebody else, right? So being able to explain things and conceptualize things in a way that the person you're communicating with needs to hear them so that they understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I use that still a lot where I work. Designers and developers sometimes have difficulty communicating, right? Mm-hmm. And being able to read the room and see what's happening and almost be a translator, right?
Yeah.
So being able to communicate easy, but the curse comes from the difficulty in overthinking things, right? I think, I don't know how many times I've heard in the past 2 weeks, Troy, stop overthinking it, right? You don't need to do this. This is all this has to be. We just need to do X, Y, and Z. So I think that being able to separate those two lines of thinking in order to get out of your own way mm-hmm. can be the challenge.
When you went from theater to environmental studies to design, you know, was there a process of overthinking when you were along that journey, or was it just the design just feel like the natural next step for your journey?
It always came back to that. Boy, I can't even really think back to what made me want to get into design. I think this was a long time ago, right? This is, I graduated mm-hmm. high school in 1989.
Okay.
I fully intended to go to architecture school and become an architect. And okay. there were some challenges in my life at the time that prevented that from happening. And I found myself really wanting to focus on the design side of things. So, you know, what do? You go to design school. And it was really difficult finding a place to land after finishing mm-hmm. that. And so I had started working in the bike industry, but I used design as I did that, right? So design and creative thinking as a bike mechanic mm-hmm. was really handy. Getting into custom frame design and paint and still having a creative outlet, but not really consciously thinking, hey, I'm designing things, right? And and even in the theater, there were things to do. There was set design, there was painting, and it just came really naturally to me. Even in the environmental science side of things, the job I got hired for was kind of split, right? So mm-hmm. I was hired to do design and marketing and put together proposals, but then also do the environmental science work. So it wasn't until that just was not fun. It was largely permitting work not fun. The design part was fun, but unfortunately that was overhead, right? And we're talking about billable hours. So
right.
I ventured out on my own and stumbled into some really cool, fun stuff and just been enjoying the ride ever since.
How long have you been on your design journey?
Boy, if I go all the way back, I mean, I could take it back to the early 90s, right?
Cool.
But I think that really working and focusing and working as a creative professional, it's been about 12 years or so since I have worked for, you know, several nonprofits in the Puget Sound area. I spent mm-hmm. some time in Microsoft Game Studios at mm-hmm. Bungie for a while. And that point is kind of where things really accelerated and started learning how to have fun with it as opposed to mm-hmm. just doing it for a paycheck.
Oh, I mean, that in and of itself is like the journey, I think, to a lot of people, is that going from paycheck to fun.
And I think it can work both ways, right? I think that there are ways to, because we need a paycheck, right? We got it. Right. But at the same time, we have to do work that's fulfilling. So it's almost a double-edged sword, right? Being able mm-hmm. to say, I need to go find work that's fulfilling, but then also saying, this is the work I'm currently doing. What do I need to do to make it fulfilling?
Right.
That side of it I've largely found comes with the people you work with, right?
Oh, yeah. Good point. So as you're going through this process, your career is accelerating into what you're doing now. Were there any moments where you're just getting stuck or even trapped in your thinking or overthinking?
Oh, yeah. And I still do, right? And I think we all do. But the challenge comes from learning how to step away from that. And it's not always an easy thing to do, right? I find it easy to get stuck and I find it challenging to get unstuck. And I think that's where this fascination with how do we solve problems through play? How do we get unstuck through play? And how can we use other types of creative action to put ourselves in a better place, right? Mm-hmm. And also sometimes when do we just stop? Yeah. And when is it a point to where you have to say, you know what, I've done what I can do. I have to step away from this and I need a day where I'm not doing any of this.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking, I'm wondering what structure of your day looks like to you, because before we started, I had to kind of clear my head of just the morning cobwebs. And so I turned on Masterclass and Werner Herzog was saying, there is no structure to the day. And I'm just like, I'm like, but that goes against everything I know in my brain, you know? So, but to you, it's like, does structure help you or hurt you?
Structure, I have to have structure. Mm-hmm. I have to have the list of things that I need to do. Otherwise, you kind of snowball down a rabbit hole, right? And then at the end of the day, you might have had a great day. Be like, wow, what did I really get done? There is a fine line between being able to play and getting into flow, but then also getting stuff done. And I have to have that structure, and I often need help setting up that structure, right? So and I think that comes from also working with a really amazing team of people where we can do that for each other.
Mm-hmm. As you're talking about going from play to flow to productivity, I'm curious about the first step of that progress. You know, what led you to become curious about play?
I didn't really think much about it until after I became a father. Mm-hmm. I had a very skewed idea of what creativity was before mm-hmm. I saw it in them. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that I believed that creativity was a trade skill, right? It was something that we learned and we practiced and we developed. Mm-hmm. I think we do learn it and practice it and develop it to a certain extent, but the idea that we're born wildly creative was something that I really didn't believe, right? Yeah. To the point where people would say, wow, your kids are so creative. I'd say, well, you know, they're imaginative, but they haven't learned how to be creative yet. And thinking back on how absurd that must have sounded, how absurd it sounds to me now to say that. And a colleague of mine who I have done the play creativity and problem solving workshop with, Esther Loopstra, was also kind of instrumental in pulling me out of that mindset. And I took a couple of her classes. Finding Your Creative Voice was one of them. And it was just a complete paradigm shift in my mind, right? Thinking about how this is. So then really understanding how innately creative we all are, I started wondering what happened to it. Why do, as adults, we struggle with the idea of creativity? Why do we hear so many people say, oh, I'm just not a creative person? Right.
Yeah.
And I want to grab those people by the collar and shake them and say, you are incredibly creative. You just need to play. But I also wondered why, as creative professionals, we struggle with the idea of, I need to be creative today, or I need to be able to turn it on. Right. Mm-hmm. And what I started tuning into this idea of, I think that to a large extent, our play is educated out of us as we grow up, right? And I think the creativity kind of goes along with that. Mm-hmm. In order to be creative, we need to be vulnerable. And in order to play, we need to be vulnerable with each other. That's where play starts, right? When the barriers are broken down and you're ready to be vulnerable with other people. And that's how we collaborate. Mm-hmm. But as I see children grow up, and I'm already starting to see it in my own kids, right? Who come home, I've got twins who are in first grade and my oldest son is in third grade.
Wow.
And I hear it in their voices, right? They come home and say, hey, what did you do at school today? What awesome things happened?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get to play today.
Oh.
And right. And I know that's not true. I'm like, largely most of what you do, even still in third grade, is play, but it's not the kind of play they like. So things start to get disguised. We wrap education up in these ideas of play and deliver it, right? That's curriculum. Mm-hmm. As we accelerate through grades, other things start to happen where our inner critic is developed. Mm. I think it's really something that we don't have when we're younger, but we get to a point where we need it. And it could be in an art class, right? You drew a picture of a horse and the teacher says, no, that's not how you draw a horse. That's not what a horse looks like. You did it wrong. So we become afraid to show our work. I think that's why I see a lot of designers who are afraid to put stuff up on the wall. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be vulnerable. Their inner critic is protecting them because it said, you know what? I'm not going to ever let you feel that way again. We're not going to put a wrong horse up on the wall. And by the time we're in high school, play is relegated to things like sports, if you happen to be on the football team or the tennis team. And even then, it's not play for play's sake. We treat it as work. We treat it as an obligation, something that you have to be measured in. We replace play with achievements. And I think that as creative professionals, the challenge is, how do we get back to that?
Because there's such a, I guess, bias against play. I mean, play isn't serious.
Right.
And yet, you know, why is it so hard to let go of that bias and just embrace play?
It's a tough question. I think we feel like we don't have time. On some level, we do understand that in order to play, we need to be vulnerable, and we're afraid to do that, right? Mm-hmm. I think that our brains spend a lot of time making up stories, right? We make up stories to fill in the gaps, like spackle. And these things aren't true, right? And the things like, I'm not a good enough designer. I'm not going to get it done on time. I'm not meeting expectations. And those things really get in the way of allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and getting into a state of play and just playing for the sake of play.
One of the ways that I consider play a part of who I am and why I don't play as much is I think about like t-shirts, for example. I love silly, funny, weird t-shirts, and yet you will never see me wear one in a business meeting.
Right.
Or even though it's a critical part of, I think, my identity, I love that stuff. And yet I don't allow myself the opportunity to do that. And it was really interesting. I was in a client meeting last week, right before Thanksgiving, and the woman I was sitting across from was wearing a Journey t-shirt.
Awesome.
And I'm just like, my God, why do I have such a problem with this? Why can't I just rock a Journey t-shirt like this person across from me? And I think play is like that. We want to just crank Journey and have fun, but we must listen to Bach.
Right. We must meet the expectations of other people.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that is a really dangerous place to go because you're putting this huge obligation on other people, right? And they're not even aware of it. But it's a example of your deliberately, I think it's a form of self-sabotage and you're getting in your own way. Mm. The challenge is becoming aware when those things happen and just going, hey, you know what? Stop. I'm going to do something different and I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah. So I'm curious, as you start looking at play, as you're taking these courses and workshops and kind of rediscovering that need for play, what was the first step for you in that journey of play? Was it, because I remember you would walk around at Bend Design with Play-Doh in your bag,
right?
But I imagine that wasn't where you started.
That, boy, it kind of blossomed in this effort of putting the workshop together that Esther and I did 2 years ago at Bend Design. And we had these really high level concepts, these things we want to talk about. It's like, how do we talk about creative problem solving? How do we address this? How do we do this in 90 minutes? Right. Mm-hmm. And what we realized was, you know, she came in and she said, it has to be about play. Mm. I said, okay, let's do that. And so we dove into even like Homo Ludens, a study of the play element in culture. And this is a book about play that was written early on in the century. And it's great information, but it's just dry. We struggled with this idea. Say, how are we going to make this fun? How are we going to make this something? This has to knock people over the head. It's the first thing they're going to do in the morning. And I want it to set the tone for the whole day.
Yeah.
Right. I was trying to replicate my experience at Bend Design the first year, which I went to a workshop like that. And it was hands-on activities, rapid fire, and I was lit up for the whole rest of the day because of that workshop, right? And it made me so much more engaged with everything else I did that day. And I said, that's the experience I want to bring to people, so what do we do? That's when I started keying into this idea. I said, you know, this is how kids play. What if we remind people that they already know how to do this because they've done it? They did it for most of their lives, right?
Yeah.
They just have lost touch with it. And we had a lot of fun designing the workshop and finding the activities and the idea of returning to a childlike state of play. We wanted to get people there and using smell.
Ooh, okay.
Smell is the only sense that completely bypasses your brain's processing centers and goes directly to memory, right? Mm, it happens to me a lot. I live in an old house in Puget Sound that was built the same decade that my grandmother's house was built in. And there are often times where I walk into the house and I'm immediately 6 years old in my grandma's house because the wood was probably the same kind of wood, right?
Yeah. Wow.
There was a bag of apples in the garage the other day and she had an apple tree in her backyard and I walked into the garage. I didn't know the apples were there, but it almost brought me to tears because I was instantly in her house, in her garage because of the smell of the apples, right? So this idea that smell is a trigger and takes us back, we wanted to use things in the workshop that would take people there. So the smell of Play-Doh. we all have sometimes not so fond of memories of the smell of it, right? But it got a reaction and you could hear it in the room when we kind of walked people through it. It was almost an exercise alone, just opening the cans of Play-Doh, and you got reactions from every single person.
Yeah.
We did a writing and a drawing component and we used the smelly Mr. Sketch markers.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing, right? And halfway through the workshop, it smelled like a preschool in the room and it transformed people and it did everything that it was designed to do and very specifically to show people that they're capable of doing it.
Yeah.
We know how to be vulnerable. We know how to collaborate and we know how to solve problems together because look, you all just did it. That was probably a really long way to go to answer that question, but I did. I very deliberately walked around Bend Design last year and had Play-Doh and so it worked too, right? It's, you know, people really want things to be very literal. They're like, well, how do you do this at every meeting at work? I said, no, you're probably not going to take Play-Doh into every single meeting or conference room you go into. But what if you did?
Yeah, right? Maybe you should.
What if it was just on the table?
It's interesting you mentioned smell as a trigger. And in both examples that you gave, you went back to your grandmother. Was that a time of your life where you played a lot? Like, did she encourage you to play?
That's a really good question. Boy, I could use the smell trigger when I came back to Bend the first time after being gone for decades. That's a whole nother story. But it's hard to think back in your childhood, right? I think that as children, we play something we take for granted. I mean, most kids take pretty much everything for granted, right?
Right.
But I think play is something that we're not really conscious of doing and we're not really aware of the kinds of problem solving that we're doing as children, right? And the problems we have to solve as kids is how do we learn about things? Mm-hmm. Play teaches us about the world around us, right? It shapes our perceptions. It guides us to become the kind of people we're going to grow up to be.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot of encouragement to play other than you need to go outside and play and I don't want to see you till dinner time. Right.
Yeah.
This was back in a time when you could be a kid out in the world left to your own devices. And man, that was play, right?
That was real play, man. Yeah. I'm laughing because I grew up in a remote area and to this day, I'd be like, oh yeah, you know, this is where I lived and I rode my bike for miles out on country roads without any fear that I was going to get run over by, you know, a car.
Right.
But now you have that worry and that fear as things become more crowded and crazy.
You do. And I grew up in Bend.
Okay.
And I left in 1989 and I hadn't been back one time until the first Bend Design Conference.
Wow.
That I went to. The second conference is the one, it was my first conference. I missed the first one.
Okay.
But I drove back down there and the first thing that hit me was coming down off of Mount Hood into Warm Springs. And I got out of the car just outside of Warm Springs and that smell of sage and juniper, it was like a soft brick in the face, right? Mm-hmm. It was this, I haven't smelled this smell in a natural setting since I was a kid. And we did the same thing. I'd bring a bike with me and I spend a lot of time on the roads and on my road bike and riding out through my old stomping grounds where we rode our bikes as kids. And I can't believe how far we rode because it's a hard ride for me to do now. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not safe. It's like the roads we rode on that we just took for granted that we were okay. And we were, there was nobody out there, but it's changed a lot. And you're right. Playing in the world is a much different thing now for kids, I think, than it was that long ago.
And yet I think there is some kind of correlation here between what we're willing to do as children. Play is something where for most of us, there is an element of risk. There's an element of fun. There's an element of I'm just doing what I do.
Right.
And then we erect all these boundaries. We erect all these rules. We unknowingly say yes to all of the things that hold us back.
Right.
And I'm curious, as an adult, how do we reject all that so that we can play again? I mean, do we have to reject it?
Oh, man, rules. Right?
Yeah.
I think this goes back to the question of structure, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea of what play is. I think that those of us who do require a fairly, I won't say rigid structure, because it's got to be adaptive somehow, but any kind of structure to get through your day, you can put play in that structure, right? Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing about play is that it has to have a start time and it has to have an end time. Hmm. Playtime yeah. starts and playtime ends. Otherwise, it's not play. It's just everything else.
Yeah.
We learned that too, growing up as kids, that it's time to stop playing and do other things now. Hmm. So I think not being able to, or not being afraid of that, that's okay. And I think it's more than okay. I think it's a kind of a requirement, right? You have mm-hmm. to set yourself a time limit when, if you are building play into your structure, you can even time it, right? Say, I'm going to play for an hour. I'm going to mm-hmm. go into a quiet room, or I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to go do whatever it is you need to do to get in that state of play. And mm-hmm. it's going to be an hour. And then when I come out, I'm going to have ideas and I'm going to be able to know what direction I'm going with this, mm-hmm. whether it's a project or any kind of life problem that you have to solve. Right?
Right.
I think that rejecting structure and rules for the sake of play, I think almost defeats the purpose of play.
Mm. And yet, as you're describing this time-bound structure of play, which is good, I'm not negating that, I feel a sense of guilt arise when I say to myself, I'm going to play for an hour.
Right.
Because then all of the other responsibilities surrounding my life then rise up and become loud and become, right. Well, why are you wasting an hour playing when you should be doing this over here?
Boy, that's a point that's really hard, right? When mm-hmm. my idea of play has certainly changed mm-hmm. and evolved, even over the course of the past couple of years when I started really kind of tuning into this, the importance of it, it was very rigid, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to play for this amount of time, and I would write tickets for it in our project tracking, right? A subtask on a ticket would be to play.
That's awesome.
And project managers convulse, their eyes start twitching, and they're like, what is this? What are you right. guys doing? What are you doing now? Playing? Why don't you just get it done? It's like, no, we're going to play. We're going to do this, this, and this. And it took me not a very long time to realize that that didn't work, right? Mm-hmm. And what was happening is that I didn't really have this clear understanding of other people play differently, right? Everybody has their own way of playing. The way a graphic designer plays is different than the way a UX designer plays, which mm-hmm. is different than the way a developer plays, mm-hmm. which is different from the way a project manager plays. It's all different, right? Mm-hmm. So we also incorporated that element in our workshop, was to be able to illustrate different teams play differently, right? So while individuals on a team have their own way of play, the way a team plays as a whole can be different.
Hmm. What I find so amazing about that is I think about culture as well, like a company culture that plays differently as well. And if you don't align with how a company plays, can you really fit in?
Wow.
I'm thinking about all the jobs where I didn't fit in is because I didn't align with how they played.
Right. Or do they allow a space to play, right?
Yeah.
I think play is happening everywhere. It has to be on some level, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's play is fundamental to our sanity and our well-being, right? Because
yeah.
It's hard, right? It's like when you're looking at new prospects and the question comes up, are they a good cultural fit?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know. I just interviewed them. I haven't had a chance to play with them.
Yeah.
Right? Thinking of it from that perspective is really interesting. And I hadn't put a lot of thought about that, but yeah, companies do play differently, but I think even within small companies and large companies, right? Large mm-hmm. companies play differently in different areas. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great question. That just kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, I think about just the expectations of people when they go into a workplace. You know, if you're so used to a certain structure or a certain level of, I hate to say it, but like professionalism, and,
right.
and you go into a place that's really loose and laid back, it can be such a mind shift. And some people can't make the shift. Like I couldn't make the shift. And so I worried what was wrong with me. And I think wondering out loud what is wrong with me is something that if you don't align with a concept of play, you can doubt that it's for you.
There's also an interesting point there of how can you change how you play?
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that's what I've learned is understanding that everybody plays differently, mm-hmm. being able to see how you need to play with somebody is a really super interesting place to practice, right? Being mm-hmm. able to have that level of empathy and intuitiveness to see how you need to change your approach to get someone to play with you.
Yeah.
Without saying we're going to play. Because when I said we're going to play, I got brick walls, right? No, we're not going to play because the solution's right over here. We just need to do A, B, and C, and we get to the solution and we're done. So what are we wasting our time for? And that's conflict, right? Mm-hmm. Where you come in and say, well, here's a solution for this problem. Mm-hmm. And you get somebody who speaks up and says, well, that won't work because of these factors. Mm-hmm. Then you present another idea and you get, well, that won't work because of these other factors. And then it's really easy to get frustrated and just going to say, well, why are we here? What are we doing? Right. We're now at a standoff and clearly we're not playing. We're doing the opposite of play. I don't know what that is, but
is that where you bust out the Nerf guns and take 10 paces? And
but what I learned from that was being able to get people to come to you by asking questions, right? And my approach would turn in is rather than saying, well, I don't know why we're here. You know, these are the ideas we have. We're stuck.
Yeah.
Being able to kind of push it back and say, well, do you have the solution? And you get, no. Well, I don't have, of course I don't have the solution. And then saying, what if you did?
Yeah.
What if the solution was right here?
Oof.
Pretend you have the answer. What does it look like? Mm-hmm. And then they start thinking and then they grab a marker and they go to the whiteboard and then you got them. They're in. Now you're playing, right? And even acknowledging that at the end, you say, wow, look at what we did. Thank you for being so resistant, right? Because of that, we reached this solution and that's awesome.
Yeah.
Right. And the word or the ideas of play never have to come up. So I think that there's two approaches here where you can go into a room and say, we're literally going to play with Play-Doh and draw with markers with our non-dominant hand, right, for 20 minutes and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's great. But I think that there's also an element of getting people to come to you. And that's where you are helping them break down those barriers.
Yeah.
And that's where you become vulnerable. And then you're not afraid, right? And I think a lot of that resistance often is either out of fear, right? We kind of, it's easy to get stuck in survival mode when we go through our day to day sometimes. And we can love our jobs and we can have the best teams in the world. But I think once you are stuck in that survival mode, then you got to find a way to shake that off, right? You got to step out of your own way. And that in itself can be an act of creativity, just having the courage to take that one step forward into the unknown.
I imagine that as you become versed in your own style of play and you see how other people are playing around you, how have you learned to have the conversation with leadership about play and why it's valuable? Because I imagine leadership and management look at play as like, why are you wasting time? I know you mentioned that earlier, but have you learned to kind of identify markers in each person and how you'll respond to them?
I've been really lucky in all the places I worked in not having a lot of resistance to that, except for the time when I was very literal and very deliberate and very rigid about what my idea of play was and how I presented it to them.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of times where you can build that into your process and the results are apparent. So you've got play built into your process without really needing to acknowledge or write tickets for play, right?
Right.
Don't do that. Maybe you work at a place and that is embraced and that's awesome. But being aware of how you talk about it and how you present it without feeling like you need to be silenced or skirt around it, right? Because that's not fun. Yeah. I've been lucky in the sense that play is encouraged. And even it sometimes is brought up to me, people say, hey, dude, you're not playing anymore. What happened? When you play, you do really cool work. And that'll often come from a PM or the CEO or my creative director. It's really easy to talk about this stuff with people. It's really easy to have awareness of it. But the practice has to be practice. We get good at the things that we practice. We can practice survival mode, which is fear-based. Or we can practice being playful and creative and taking risks. And it's kind of a fake it till you make it, right? Some of these things feel forced. mm-hmm. at first, and that's fine. If you ever watch the show, is it Seinfeld show, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
Yeah.
There was a great quote. I can't remember the comedian he was talking to, but he was talking about mustering up the courage to get on stage. Mm-hmm. And he talked about this idea of faking courage. Mm. And Seinfeld said, that's the same thing. Faking courage and courage are the same thing, right? We're often, you have to muster it. You have to put yourself in that space, right? It doesn't just come. It's like, in order to be brave, you have to be afraid. And you sometimes it might feel like a fake thing, but you're doing it mm-hmm. and you're practicing it and your brain's learning it.
One of the things that I really appreciate about you, Troy, is that I can just tell that it's not just an intellectual exercise with you when you're talking about play. It's really something that you're working through in your own life as well. You're actively participating in what you're talking about.
Right.
And I just think that's amazing, because it's what it means to me is that you've gone from needing to be told what creativity is to becoming a creative leader in how you're expressing your creativity through play, through learning how to communicate it with others. And I'm wondering if creative leadership is something that comes naturally to you.
I would say yes until I overthink it, right? We talked about that. Yeah, I think absolutely it does come naturally, but I also think that there are elements of creative leadership that come naturally to all of us. Right.
Like what?
I think that I love this idea. I believe it's true that anybody has an opportunity to be a creative leader or show creative leadership on some level. Right. Mm-hmm. Whether if you're looking at the workplace, I've worked with brand new graduates who are design interns who I think are doing things that are wildly creative and showing good leadership by. Mm-hmm. They're doing what's important to them and showing others that they can do it too. Mm. I think there's a lot of creative leadership things that happen that we don't realize we're teaching. Simply being in a room and asking a question when everybody else is afraid to ask a dumb question, right? If you have a dumb question to ask, I guarantee you that there's several other people in the room who have the same question.
Yeah.
And you can ask a question. That's, I think, a form of creative leadership for a team, because you're showing other people that they have a voice. Mm-hmm. They can also do this. I started volunteering as an art docent this year at my kid's school for the first grade class.
That's awesome.
Every single one of those little kids is a creative leader in their own way, in that they are teaching me. Mm-hmm. They're teaching me things that I can now bring back into my team and into my workshop. There are so many creative acts that we do in our lives every day that aren't necessarily directly connected to the work that we do as creative mm-hmm. professionals that are important to do for ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if you're being your own creative leader. And I think you have to be on some level. I think you have to be able to lead yourself through challenges before you can lead other people through them.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a you're leading by example. This idea that I wrote down this morning of creativity being the courage to take a step and to move forward, even when we have no idea where it's going to take us.
I love that.
Because you're going to go down. This is what we do as creative professionals, is we have ideas, right? And we follow these ideas down a path until another idea comes and convinces us to take a different path. Mm. And being able to have that flexibility and trust your own choices. Mm. I think that is going to put you in a good position to help other people do the same thing when they're stuck.
Mm. I like that you mentioned being an art docent for your first graders.
It's so much fun.
What I appreciate about that too, is that you said something really insightful, that you're willing to learn from them by opening yourself up to what they're doing and their experiences. And I think that is a hallmark of a great leader. Yes, they're confident in who they are and what they know, but they're willing to open themselves up to other people.
Right.
And it can be really hard to open yourself up to a child and be willing to admit that they might know something that you don't know or have forgotten.
Speaking in front of a room of first graders about line, pattern, and shape is far more intimidating than standing up in front of our entire company and giving a presentation about my experience at Bend Design.
Yeah.
So, okay, if I can get in front of a room of first graders, I can talk about anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is really strange. But then it's also having that self-awareness and that curiosity of, why do I feel like this? Mm-hmm. Why is this so intimidating? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just because they're so naturally calm and in their element, but they have no expectations.
Yeah.
They just got out of recess. They have no idea what's coming next. They have no agenda. And it's an amazing, beautiful thing.
Yeah. I'm curious if you have a play hero, someone that you look up to think and act deeper when it comes to play.
I have a couple people who I very deeply respect and admire and have definitely influenced how I think about things and how I approach my own creativity. Mm-hmm. The first would be Patrick Stewart.
Okay.
I remember watching, I can't remember what the name of the series was. It was the British Shakespeare Company did a show almost formatted like Inside the Actor's Studio, same kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
But they also did some improv and techniques, and very, very young Patrick Stewart, this is pre-Star Trek Next Generation, was in a lot of those. And I just was mesmerized watching this guy and then following him as an actor, but then hearing how he talks about how he lives, who he is in his life. I really deeply respect everything he stands for and how he finds play and playfulness in how that influences his own career.
Mm-hmm. I like how he uses Twitter as a form of play as well.
Right. Yeah, it's fantastic. And then another guy who you've interviewed, James Victorie.
Okay, yeah.
Has been pouring gasoline on my fire, so to speak, for the past month or so. I was aware of who he was, but I really didn't dig into him until, boy, I don't even remember, something just random popped up on my Facebook feed. I think it was one of his videos somehow. Mm-hmm. I think going to the Bend Design Conference and getting connected with people, all of a sudden, you know, the algorithms were right. They said, oh, this guy needs to see a James Victorie video, right? And it was just, it floored me. Yeah. And hearing him speak about himself, it just blew me away. Mm-hmm. It's more, and you can't say, oh, you know, he's so confident, and some people might say arrogant, but it's not that. It's he's so genuinely himself. Mm-hmm. What I've been learning from him, you know, watching his videos and reading through his book and trying to figure out how to go do this workshop he does in Texas, right?
Yeah, that would be a blast.
Oh, man, that would just be, that would make my year. You know, his idea that what made us weird as kids is what makes us great now. Yeah. And I think I can relate that to what I see in myself and what I see in other designers around me is that the things that we struggle with every day, the things that we feel like we fight against, the things that prevent us from putting our work up on the wall or from feeling like we have to have everything perfect, I think all those little things are the things that make us great. Mm. We are creating unnecessary tension in resisting the things that we know we intuitively need to do, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, getting out of our own way, right? And I think that being able to do those things in themselves are acts of creativity, right? Creativity has a lot to do with embodying our mind and body in the realm of what is unknown. When we operate in survival mode, that's when that unknown area is really scary.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where we struggle with our work. You know, creativity is, it's how we take what the world gives us and how we use it. Right. And a lot of what we get is out of our control. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do with it to feed it back to the world in a way that's meaningful and makes sense or doesn't make sense, right? Maybe it doesn't have to make sense.
I got to ask, what made you weird as a kid?
Oh, man. What made me weird as a kid? I grew up as an only child. So I spent a lot of time walking around, you know, Central Oregon in the woods by myself, talking to trees. I did. My mom's, where were you? I said, oh, I was out in the back talking to trees.
That's awesome. Right?
And my parents were very religious. And she said, oh, you mean talking to God?
Yeah.
No, I was talking to that tree right over there.
Yeah. His name's Bob.
Right. Right. Yeah. That made me weird.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great. Troy, this has been such a fun conversation. Just to let you know, like, at a certain point, I started to play in this conversation because I knew you would play along. And that's what I think so many people need to learn how to do more is just play. And think of almost play as dance, where you're playing off of each other. And I just appreciate how you've really helped me to think deeper about play in my own life and work. So thank you for that.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And so the last question that I have for you is, what was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
I'm going to do two. I have to mention one, and I already talked about him a little bit, but James Victoria's book, Feck Perfection.
Great book.
What I love about it is that you read it and you're like, oh yeah, this is so easy. Mm-hmm. But is it? Right?
Right.
That's the challenge, right? And that's where the practice comes in. And he really just nails home, you got to get out of your own way, mm-hmm. right? You got to stop overthinking things and start embracing things that are weird. And you can't do that unless you're playing. Mm-hmm. I've been reading another book about design. It's Designing Your Life.
Okay.
The Bill Burnett and Dave Evans book.
Yeah.
And good book. I picked it up mostly as kind of a textbook and exercise. We have a bunch of them at work, and I started reading it. And what I love about it is that being able to, you know, we work as designers, we work as creative professionals. How much of that effort do we put into our own lives, yeah. right? One of the biggest struggles I have, and I think a lot of people have this too, is really wanting things to be different from the way they are, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, relationships or big life things or even little things, right? And I think that two things can help alleviate that. One is just simply learning how to be in the moment. Mm-hmm. When we're in situations and we desperately want them to not be the way they are, then that means our mind is somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we're putting our mind in that situation that we want, but we can't have, right? Mm. But then also understanding what of those things can I change by either changing things inside me mm-hmm. that will affect change outside. And what are the things that I have absolutely no control over that there's no way I can influence at all, right? Mm. And I think those are the things that when we get stuck on wanting to those things to be different, then we have a choice, right? We can change our perspective or we can basically wallow in our own misery, right? And that's not productive. You can't play when you're in that state. And so these two books, I can combine the two, right? One is irreverent and beautiful and just wildly inspiring, and the other is kind of a textbook manual to be able to go through and say, oh yeah, right, you know what, I can find joy in the things I do every day. There are things I do every day that I love that mm-hmm. you know, seem mundane, but then being able to come away and say, now I have an understanding of what I love to do and what I don't love to do, and I can start designing my life around those things.
And what I love about the choices that you've made, even in the books, is that they are a perfect representation of you as a person. They incorporate your left brain thinking and your right brain thinking, even in the way, even in the way that you describe them. I mean, it's just like, I appreciate that too, because sometimes we feel like we have to cut off the aspect of us that maybe, oh, well, in order to be a wildly creative designer, I can't be left brain thinking, or, right. you know, I can't be a wildly creative left brain thinker, you know? And so I just appreciate that you've learned to embrace both sides, even in the books that you recommend.
I think it's great. And right, we talked early in the interview, we talked about the partnership of science and design, mm-hmm. right? And I think that they really do go hand in hand together, because science mm-hmm. is all about wonder and curiosity.
Yeah.
And design is all about wonder and curiosity, if we choose it to be, mm-hmm. right? We can either toil in trying to find the perfect solution and the final answer mm-hmm. based on creative briefs, or we can make room for playful curiosity and wonder to help us get to those solutions more efficiently and in a much more holistic way. Whether it's a painting that you are going to hang on a wall, or an icon set, or templates, or whatever it is, there can be joy just in the exercise of crafting these things, mm-hmm. regardless of what the final outcome is going to be.
Troy, this has been such a great interview. Thank you so much for just being a guest on Getting Work to Work, sharing all about play and life. And my day is going to be that much better because of this. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate this. This was a incredibly fun thing to do, something unexpected. And yeah, I appreciate you helping me put myself out there.
Absolutely. Regardless of whether you call it play or simply give yourself freedom to try new things, I hope that you'll bring a larger sense of play to your life and work. I know it can be a struggle. I've been there. I really struggle with this idea of play, but I really do believe it's worth it to bring play back into our work, have more fun, and connect with the things that make us wildly creative. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.